Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
9 o'clock hour. We'll continue to get you ready for Colts Texans. We'll be doing plenty of that tomorrow as well. If you want to text the show, 713-572-4610. A lot of people have Bregman opinions on there about contracts. We'll get to you guys. 713-572-4610. Just coming up, we'll talk about the Texans here on the odds board in just a second. Vegas does not seem to think the window is closed on the Astros, Seth. They are on the 2025 World Series odds board. The Astros tied for fourth at 12-1. Yeah, it's a little lower than they've been the last few years. Typically, the last few years they have been, it's been them and then whatever. Like this year, it was Dodgers, Braves were going to be better than everybody else.
Yeah.
And then the Astros were going to win the American League. Didn't play out that way, but they're fourth right now, tied with Philadelphia and Baltimore right now.
I think the one thing that, because we're too close to the situation in Houston, I think the one thing that you never want to make excuses either. And yet, it almost got to a point where there was just so many things beleaguering the Astros squad at given times last year that you forget how up against it they were by the end of the season. They had just, I mean, the injuries to the pitching staff, the injury to Kyle Tucker, you know, now there's no excuse for the bad start, but the bad start being what it was, your older players and your veteran players did not get load managed at all. Your relievers pitched just so many innings. There were a lot of things that by the end of the season, this was an Astros team that was running on fumes. And it felt that way. But it's almost like, and I credit you as Astros fans for not wanting to make excuses. But it's okay now if you're going to look at it analytically to say, all right, yeah, they had to overcome a lot of, some of it self-imposed, some of it not self-imposed, but they had to overcome a lot of obstacles so that by the end of the year, they weren't firing on all cylinders. So with or without Alex Bregman, I think that you can still look at either pitcher health or Kyle Tucker's health or various other things like that and realize, oh yeah, okay, this is still a very good baseball team.
Yeah, 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 for sure. And I don't know. I mean, maybe, who knows? Maybe them essentially getting the month of October off for a change has some sort of residual effect down the road next year.
No, that's real too. When you talk about the Astros' slow starts, you've always wondered how much of it is the fact that the Astros have, on average, in any given year, 1 month less time to rest than everybody else. That affects how you use them in spring training and everything else. So yeah, maybe a little bit of a sabbatical. They took a sabbatical from deep postseason play, and maybe that ends up, they come back reinvigorated.
They're load managing. They're literally load managing postseasons right now. Like, you know what? We're going to participate. We're not going to really participate in this postseason.
I know you didn't watch Mad Men, but in the final season of Mad Men, Don Draper goes off the rails a little bit, ends up, it's like some new age retreat in California. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back and he creates the I'd like to buy the world a Coke ad campaign.
Wow.
And he took a little bit of a sabbatical.
Yeah.
And he came back reinvigorated and refreshed and seeing things in a different way.
Yep.
Yes.
That's
probably did a bunch of acid too. But that was a different time. It was a different time back then.
Yeah, I don't think the Astros are going to wind up doing any acid or anything this offseason.
Yeah.
Not all of them, at least. Super Bowl. The Texans, man, this is fun. Like, our teams are right in the mix. Texans tied for sixth on the Super Bowl odds board I don't have the exact number in front of me. I'm clicking on the link right now, but they're tied with, ironically, Green Bay, who they just played this past week. And the only teams in front of the Texans for the Super Bowl right now are the Kansas City Chiefs, who are at the top, Baltimore Ravens, Detroit Lions, Buffalo Bills, who last I checked lost recently to the Houston Texans, and the San Francisco 49ers, man. Vegas can't quit them. The San Francisco 49ers are still up there at plus 950. The Texans are plus 1,400, so they're 14-1 to win the Super Bowl right now.
I think the interesting thing, we talked earlier, we went over the advanced stats.
Yeah.
That being, how many points have you scored?
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the Texans are 14th in scoring. And if you look at the other teams that are at or like around where they are or above them in scoring or in the Super Bowl odds. The only other team that's got a tepid offense in the same way that the Texans do are the Eagles. And you go around and look at Philadelphia Eagles media right now, and they're just as concerned about the offense just seemingly not firing on all cylinders as the Texans are. You can talk about defense winning championships and all that. Generally, these days, having a good scoring offense means a lot in being an actual Super Bowl. So I think the defense is good enough to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I think the quarterback is good enough to win a Super Bowl.
Yep.
The offense as a total is just right now not a genuinely Super Bowl caliber offense.
Not consistently. Not consistently. Yeah. And you got to pray. If they're 14th going into the postseason, assuming they make the postseason, then you're going to have to hope they have a couple good days at the office to get deep into the playoffs for sure. Do they feel like the 14th best offense, right? Like they don't, maybe it's recency bias watching CJ Stroud run around. Maybe it's the second half statistics that you and I have recited chapter and verse this week. They are an awful, awful second half offensive team. It doesn't feel like they're upper half of the league right now.
They're not scoring prolifically, but they're also not getting shut out.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, it's not like they go, they've had a hard time scoring points for four quarters.
Yeah.
Specifically the third and fourth quarter.
Yes, two quarters, yes.
Right. Which are big quarters. I know a lot of people like to ignore the third and fourth quarter.
They do.
You know?
They don't get enough attention. You're right.
Yeah, but really the third and fourth quarter, in a lot of ways,
kind of important.
They matter, Sean.
Yeah, no, they do.
They matter. I'll be the one that says it. Yeah. I'll be the one that's brave enough to talk about the third and the fourth quarter being quarters that actually matter.
You are so strong. I admire you, man.
It's a rough hill to die on. The team that's just one tick above the Texans right now, that's scoring 0.3 points more per game than the Texans, is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, okay.
The favorite to win the Super Bowl.
Well, and again,
so there I left them out of my analysis, which obviously, because I kind of put them off in a different category of people don't care what they're scoring in the regular season as long as they show. So the Eagles and so right now, Kansas City is the 13th scoring offense. Yeah. Houston is the 14th scoring offense.
Right.
Philadelphia is the 17th scoring offense.
Okay, well, there's an unknown corollary to your analysis that you're not pointing out, which is that when you've won two Super Bowls in a row, you're immune to any criticism of regular season mediocrity.
And I kind of, like, I'm guilty of that. I just kind of threw them off into a different bucket. But that is right where they are. And we saw this out of Kansas City last year. They were a different team in the postseason. The Texans don't get that credit right now, obviously. They're going to be a different team in the postseason.
C.J. Stroud is seventh on the odds board for MVP. But he's been as high as two this season. I think after that Buffalo game, I think he got all the way up to two when they were 4-1 and just beat Buffalo. He's seventh now at 14-1. If this were a stock, C.J.'s MVP stock, not something where you have one winner at the end, but just whatever the odds are towards the end of the season, and you could cash out at some point on a CJ Stroud MVP ticket like it's a stock, would you buy at 14-1 right now, or would you sell at 14-1?
I think right now, given the way the offense looks and my confidence in that by the real meat of the second half of the season, you're going to get Nico Collins back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's still a good buy.
Okay.
I think that's a good buy because this is what I fear coming up. All right, you face the Colts, okay defense. They're better against the run than they had been in those first couple of weeks. Then you face a really good defense in the Jets, and then you face the Lions.
Yeah.
So opportunities. Does Nico Collins come back for that Lions game? And that's probably crunch time for the actual where people start to cement their feelings about quarterbacks.
Yes.
If the offense doesn't show up against the Jets and the Lions, and depending on whether the Texans win that game and how they win them, that'll probably tell the story. Because if the Texans lay an egg versus those two teams and hide both primetime games, then I think that's pretty much it. Now if they click, then the odds for CJ go way up in a good way.
With huge opportunity on the back end of the schedule. You close the season, essentially, with two games in 5 days on national TV against Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, the top two guys on the board right now.
If the offense doesn't click versus the Jets and the Lions, there's almost nothing the Texans could do versus the Cowboys, the Titans, and the Jaguars, and the Dolphins.
That would escalate
that,
you.
That man. Are going to, right. It, all people would be saying as well, let's see what happens when they face the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Yeah.
You know, at
and
the
by
end
then,
of the
you're 10th on the odds board, and you got to make up all kinds of, which is, I don't even know if that's doable, because I can't think of a quarterback who will have had that kind of opportunity to go make that sort of impression so late in the season, literally playing what are probably going to be the top two of the top, if not the top two guys, on national TV within a four-day period. That's an incredible opportunity.
The line of demarcation probably becomes that Jets game on Halloween night. Yep. Where you've maybe that if the Texans look good versus the Colts, people aren't going to give them a whole bunch of credit for it.
Correct.
It's Halloween night, primetime game. I know Amazon primetime game, but it's still a lot. There's going to be a lot written about that on Friday.
Against a team that held you to 6 points last year in that exact same venue late in the season, the Jets.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's a bit of a redemption for CJ in that game, too. He got concussed in that game. How about Will Anderson?
Quinnen Williams still alive?
Last I checked, he is, yeah.
Son of a...
Yeah, Damn yeah. It. Yep, he's still there as his juice scrugs.
But playing a different position.
That's Sean. Well, okay, he's been replaced.
You've got Kenyon Green blocking Quinnen Williams
I don't know.
On that
Maybe
play
by
now.
Then it might be somebody
yeah.
else. Who knows?
Yeah.
How about Will Anderson, number two on the odds board for defensive player of the
get
year
some.
Right now?
Get some, Will. Get some.
Plus 650. We need TJ Watt to get abducted by aliens. Nothing violent. Just take him away for a few games and bring him back to where it moves him down the odds board.
Okay, so now if the Texans, like let's say hypothetically the Texans beat the Lions, and beating the Jets isn't as big a deal, except if they beat them and the offense doesn't perform,
yeah.
and maybe the Texans win a close game versus the Lions, but it's not an offensive performance,
yeah.
that'll hurt CJ's odds. But that'll ramp up Will Anderson's
Will,
odds
yeah,
on
yeah.
nationally televised
he gets a sack.
Games.
You know, he does
yeah,
something in
yeah,
that
especially
game.
If you look at the Lions versus the Texans, the Lions don't have Aiden Hutchinson.
Right.
And if they lose a game to the Texans yeah. where Will Anderson gets a couple of sacks, yeah, that's big.
Has,
that's really big.
Has Will you've watched every snap of Will this year, obviously, and watched plenty of the other guys on this odds board. When you've watched Will this year, have you said to yourself at any point, like, could you envision yourself saying, there goes the second best defensive player in all of football right now?
No, yeah. no, not.
You've been really good.
Yeah. The last couple of weeks he started to come into looking a little bit more like I think he planned in the offseason.
Yes.
And it takes some time. I mean, he made a lot of changes to the way he rushes the passer,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of reverted back to some of his old habits early in the season. Yeah. It started to show up more and more now, and now he looks like a more menacing guy that can work the edges, the guy that uses his hands more surgically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some of the muscle memory is starting to click on some of that stuff. So now it's starting to look more like what I think he's capable of.
Yeah, no doubt. As far as other odds, D'Amico, 10th on the odds board for Coach of the Year. Kalen Bullock, 12th on the odds board for Defensive Rookie of the Year. I hate that Kamari Lassiter got hurt because it torpedoed your 40-1 ticket for him. I wanted you to win that so badly. That would have been a nice storyline for the show.
Yeah. You never know. He's still got time to come up and get some picks and whatnot.
He's got work to do, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He can do it. You never know.
By the way, just Will Anderson right now is tied for 6th in sacks.
Okay.
Boy, Dexter Lawrence of the Giants.
Oh, he's having a huge
9
year.
9 sacks on yeah. the year.
From the interior.
I know. These defensive tackles are just, it's crazy.
Like, there's some athletic ones out there.
These dudes have gotten just so freakishly athletic on the inside.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
Rockets, 43.5 wins. I placed an over wager on them last night, my friend, on 43.5 wins. And you're asking me how I feel one game into the season? Still feel okay. I just wish they hadn't blown that lead to the Charlotte Hornets last night.
You know what? It's like you hate to. There's so many NBA games anymore where you can say, "Well, look, they missed all their threes. They were just abysmal from three." But I think you look deeper into it and the way it was in the second half, they started forcing things more.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they missed open threes, but also they weren't letting the game come to them offensively. They looked disjointed. Shangoon's got to learn to operate in a world where he's going to get blitzed and doubled and tripled and figure all that out. And I trust that that's going to get better as the season goes along. But they just looked, they looked like a team that's got a mixture of veteran and young players who just weren't firing on all cylinders. Yeah. But it was versus a bad basketball team at home.
Şengün looked like an MVP candidate in the first half. He had 19 points at halftime. He's knocking down threes. He's got assists. He's blocking shots. And then in the second half, he looked just lost, and he had a horrible turnover in the last minute. Down three, and he's dribbling in the open floor, and I don't know what. He kind of went behind. It looked like he was trying to throw a behind-the-back pass while avoiding a charge, and he just threw it right to the other team, man. So we'll see. They got Memphis coming to town tomorrow night. Hey, college basketball season is around the corner. Don't miss your chance to catch the Cougs men's basketball team. Love the Cougs, man. Men's basketball. Facing off with Texas A&M. Charity exhibition game this Sunday, October 27th, 4 o'clock at the Fertitta Center over at U of H. Grab your tickets right now. These are two really, really good basketball programs. I mean, the Cougs are a great basketball program. Grab your tickets now for just $35, and proceeds will benefit those affected by Hurricane Beryl right here in the greater Houston area. Call 713-GO-COUGS or visit uhcougars.com/tickets to get those tickets now. Yeah, man, head out to the football game and then head over to the basketball game at 4 o'clock over at the Fertitta Center. Hey, up next, vote of confidence for a head coach and GM that I never saw coming. Happened today. We'll get, and also a former head coach spotted at a practice yesterday. Should the Texans have been placing a phone call to this particular head coach to see if he wanted to come to their practice? We'll talk about that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, you know, we love the coaching cycle here. I really like the fact that we're not on it anymore here in Houston football-wise. That was kind of a brutal few years where this time of year for a three-year period, we're looking more at who the candidates are going to be out there on the coaching cycle than we are looking at the standings of the National Football League. I'm glad to be a standing city, not a coaching hot list city. One team that would appear to be on the coaching hot list, city list, but took themselves off of it today, I guess at least for now, is the New York Giants. According to owner John Mara, the Giants are not making any coaching or GM changes during the season. They don't intend to make one with Brian Daboll or Joe Shane, Seth, after the year either. These two just got a vote of confidence. We'll play the audio of Joe Shane. Shane is the more surprising one based on his performance in Hard Knocks that we'll get to in a second. But how about this? How about old John Mara, who is still, I would imagine, very disappointed, disturbed that Saquon Barkley is not on his team anymore, that he's running for $170 for the Eagles against his team, made his intentions clear Wednesday night that Daboll and Shane are going to be around in 2025 as well. How about that?
Yeah, but he's been thoroughly brainwashed by his GM, which is a spot that, you know, people know all too well when watching sports around the league, historically, in current time, that, you know, that's going on in Jacksonville right now. Shad Khan has been thoroughly brainwashed by his general manager, Trent Baalke. So I think that Joe Shane has been so gaslit by his GM. And even after being basically embarrassed and humiliated on offseason Hard Knocks, that the owner is still 100% in Joe Shane's corner. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Here's what brainwashing sounds like.
What's the latest? Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not. Which I don't know if I'll make a couple calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen, but
I'm gonna have a tough time sleeping if Saquon goes to Philadelphia. I'll tell you that, as I've told you, just being out. I have been around enough players, but he's the. He's the most popular player we have by far.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's the least popular player you have?
That's a good question.
But Daniel Jones. It's Daniel Jones.
Right now.
And the entire, again, on offseason Hard Knocks, you've got a GM who just paid Daniel Jones. You know, that was okay.
$40 million a year.
He was there when Joe Shane got there, but Joe Shane paid Daniel Jones and is saying, after paying Daniel Jones last year, is saying 1 year later, this entire offseason Hard Knocks, we have to find out what we have in this quarterback.
Yeah.
And they're finding out that, okay, they're maybe not that much. Yeah. And yet, but it's not Joe Shane's fault, Sean.
No, not at all. God, I am really surprised that – I'm surprised both of them are surviving. I'm really surprised Shane is after the way he – like, you watch that video of I'm Mara. I'm like, I got duped by this guy.
No, and every offseason – like, every episode, Joe Shane is telling everybody in the building how nobody's even going to really want Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
And that, no, of course the Eagles won't want him.
Right.
No, why would they want him? They wouldn't right. want Saquon Barkley. So – yeah, but I also, look, is Mara crafty enough that this is just what he's saying right now and that these things can always change?
You want me to read the quote from Mara? This is Mara. He said he last night he was at the premiere of The Duke, Wellington Mara's Giant Life. It was a movie about his father's life and contributions to the game of football. Here's what Mara said when he was asked about it.
Obviously, we're all very disappointed with where we are right now, but I'm going to say one thing. We're not making any changes this season, and I do not anticipate making any changes in the offseason either. End quote.
I do not anticipate.
Yes, I do not anticipate. There okay. you go.
He left the door
that
open.
That's a smart way to say nothing while saying something. It feels like something. Yeah, he gave himself that window.
Oh, I left out. There was the last part of the quote. I love you, Saquon. End quote. I left that.
What did he say about Daniel Jones?
What's that?
Did he voice his support for Daniel Jones?
He did. Not in this article. I don't know. I wasn't at the press conference, so I don't see anything about Daniel Jones. I'm actually looking to see if there is.
I think I try to be more patient than my recent year.
That is true. He fired a couple coaches after 2 years. He fired Joe Judge after 2 years. He fired, what was the guy with the big, Ben McAdoo? The guy who had a suit that looked like it was made for Andre the Giant at his introductory press conference. He fired both those guys after 2 years. So he ain't afraid to fire guys. But maybe he's getting a little more Jerry Jones-ish in his old age. He's going to let guys hang around a little while. Hey, real quick, did you see Robert Saleh was at Packers practice yesterday?
Yeah, I did. I was disappointed. I was, you know what? I respect him for at least. I don't know if he consulted with the Packers before the Texans played the Packers.
Yeah.
If he did, it might make me feel a little bit better about the drubbing that the Texans offense took.
Oh, that maybe he gave some trade secrets from last year.
Yeah, because he knows D'Amico and Bobby Slowick very well.
Yeah.
And practice against, you know, and 49ers would practice very competitively against each other, offenses versus defense. So that, yeah, maybe he had a clue just from if he spent a little bit of time, if he's accepting a paycheck from the Packers at all. Or at least it had agreed to an arrangement. He might have watched some film before last week.
They 100% had to have talked before that Texans game, right? They didn't just have a conversation Monday and he's in Green Bay on Wednesday. Like LaFleur probably called him after he got fired, you know, if nothing else, to say, hey man, keep your chin up or something like that, you know?
It is, you know, there's enough crossover and there's so many guys from that Kubiak Shanahan tree right now in the league that it feels like I'm disappointed that the Texans weren't if they were at all however Green Bay came to retain Robert Saleh.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was a little bit of a race by teams that were like, man, this guy's got a wealth of knowledge about a lot of these coaches in the league right now. That maybe the Texans missed out on something there.
Maybe.
You're facing the Jets in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But any of the other teams you face where there's crossover, I think Saleh has consistently, for multiple years now, put really good defenses out there.
Yeah. Like, at the very least, I'm not even talking about, like, a consultant to help the Texans defense. I think what you're talking about, like, a consultant to help the Texans offense, you know? Like
The red team stuff.
Yeah.
The red team is where you have another, it's a term stolen from the military, but in NFL teams, you have a red team. Those are the guys that, it's kind of what Vic Fangio was doing for the Eagles in their Super Bowl year a couple years ago.
Yep.
He's kind of looking at the offensive game plan and saying, hey, this is how I would attack this.
Yeah.
Or this is what I would do. And it kind of, it catches blind spots for the coordinators.
They could use that right now on offense, man, for sure. Working up our appropriate amount of vitriol for the Colts. We'll do that in the final segment of the show. Larry's in Stafford. What's going on, Larry? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Seth? Hey, real quick, on the Astros and that Bregman deal that y'all was talking about.
Yeah.
I'd do that deal for 6 or 7 years too, man, because here's the thing. If they don't sign Bregman, they've created a hole at third base and first base. That makes no sense, because I don't know who's the third baseman they have down in Double A or whatever that's going to come up and replace that kind of glove and that kind of bat in that lineup. You give them that money because you're not really paying anybody else on your pitching staff. Once you let Verlander go, you're going to free up money. So not paying him just doesn't make sense, especially when legitimately it gives you an opportunity for your window not to be closed. On the Rockets last night, I cannot watch them early in the season, because how do you play the first half of the basketball game the way you played the first half of the basketball game and bring your ass out there in the second half and lose to Charlotte like that, man? That's the kind of immaturity and the kind of players that they need to grow up over there on Crawford or wherever the hell in the Toyota Center and start playing basketball at the kind of level that it's time for them to start doing. Because it's time to get out of this malaise of just being a mediocre-ass professional basketball team in the city of Houston. They got more than enough talent to win games and not lose games against the AAU team. Now, let's talk about them Texans. Look, this is real simple. We understand that the Texas offense has the talent to go out there and play. And Bobby has been catching a lot this week. We broke down the All-22, and they were in that bunch formation for damn near 90% of the game. In the first half, we don't think we've seen a wide receiver outside the numbers except for once in the first half, maybe twice, give or take. Why Bobby is constricting that offense like that with the talent that he has at quarterback makes no damn sense. And it's causing C.J. Stroud to get jittery. The reason why everybody's worried about C.J. being jittery, because we remember when David Carr has went loop-de-loop with his head getting sacked so many damn times, and we saw the number his Deshaun took, and we don't want that for C.J. Bobby Slowick needs to open up that damn offense, and he needs to create spacing with that offense in terms of spreading it out, going empty backfield with CJ, and letting that maestro conduct that orchestra over there instead of thinking that his scheme is just so elite. Bobby Slowick is the issue for me, man, because I don't think it's a talent problem. As far as the offensive line, I'm not buying that neither, because I'm going to tell you what, you got to allow them boys to figure this out, because when Joe Mixon is running hard, that offensive line is looking good. Here's the thing about it. They just got to grow together. But the bigger issue is the scheme, and Bobby better figure that out, or D'Amico better get in his ass and get him some help over there in our hall.
Appreciate it, Larry.
Yeah, I do think that there is something to just, all right, whether you call it let CJ cook or not, there is something to, like, you know how you beat the blitz? Yeah, one way is to have all these bodies down in there and just try to provide as many bullet pillows as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The other is to just spread it out and let the quarterback do it.
Yeah.
You know, and get to the point, can CJ be that quarterback that gets the reputation of, oh, crap, don't blitz him? Because right now, they're bringing all these guys who are inadequate pass protectors and or run blockers down into – Sean, it's like you're a military unit surrounded by the enemy, and somebody comes to you and says, oh, hey – we got more problems. It turns out, all the ammo, they're duds. We've got a bunch of duds. And your answer is, okay, well, then I guess we need more ammo. Like, well, no, we can't. No, don't give me any more of this same ammo. We need different ammo.
Right.
You're bringing Dalton Schultz down to do something he's not good at. He's a dud as a pass protector.
He's a dud.
Get him the hell away from there.
Yeah.
You're bringing Stephon Diggs down to be a run blocker. He tries, but he's not going to hawk down a safety on the reg in the blocking, you know, to block. It's just like, get him the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Stop it. You're giving me dud ammo to try to protect myself against the hordes, and it's not working. Let CJ do it.
The crazy thing is, statistically, CJ was excellent against the blitz last year, but this is where you realize there's degrees of the blitz, which is there's the blitz that kind of gets home or that gets picked up or whatever, and then there's the ones where two guys are running at him at a full sprint.
Was it like, okay, oh, they're blitzing. Okay, what are CJ's option? Well, he could throw it to the tight end, but the tight end is whiffing on a pass block.
Beat.
So,
yeah. Now what? More ammo!
That's what it is. You're giving the colonel the option of like, okay, should we give a really good sniper rifle right. that's got good ammo to our best sniper, or should we give more dud ammo to all the other the infantry? And this colonel is like, give more dud ammo. Bring it on.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Final segment coming up. The trash talk has begun between the Colts and the Texans, between their most familiar faces. We will grade that and start to dig into this. Well, continue to dig into this Colts matchup as well. CJ had an interesting request for D'Amico and the coaching staff yesterday. We will get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, we'll talk to the fellas on In the Loop in a few minutes here, find out what they've got going on today here on the show. Thursday, so we're just a couple days away from Texans and Colts on Sunday. Noon kick, 9 a.m. Texans countdown. Seth and I have you for that. If you're headed out to the game, come see us. We'll be on the stage outside the southeast corner of the stadium. Ooh. Yeah, yeah. Outdoors, baby.
What's the weather going to be like?
A little hot. Not like summer hot, but not like crazy hot. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's been nice. It's actually been really nice the last couple times.
Yeah, they equip us
not
with
so
those,
humid anymore.
The coolers that they give us now. Not that anybody cares how Seth and I feel up on that stage, but the coolers actually they work this year.
Well, but even for the people that just want to hang out at the tables in front of the stage, yeah. the weather's been pretty comfortable.
It has not been.
You can sit there without being miserable the whole time.
High of 87, and I'm guessing we won't get the high, so we'll probably be late, high 70s, low 80s is what I'm guessing we'll be. Should be a whole lot of fun. I feel pretty confident about this game. D'Amico Ryans, if you're looking for how this team does. If you're wondering how the Texans do coming off of losses, I went and did the math yesterday. Seth, I did the research yesterday.
Yes, good job.
They are 7-0 since losing to the Colts in week 2 at home last season. That's the only 2-game losing streak D'Amico Ryans has ever had as a head coach is the first 2 games of his coaching career. Losing to the Ravens, losing to the Colts, and then they were off to the races after that. They were 10-5 the rest of the way. Last year, they are 7-0 since that Colts game in week 2. They are 7-0 and 5-2 against the spread coming off a loss. So they not only win, but more often than not, they overachieve. They tend to overachieve expectations as well.
Yeah, that's good. They bounce back.
They bounce back
good, this squad.
Yes.
They're good bouncer backers.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Which probably made J.J. Watt all the more confident to unleash this bit of trash talk, or at least attempt at it, on the Pat McAfee show yesterday.
Speaking of Indiana, we got Colts Texans. Saddest the last one of the year. It's already the second one. Sad it's so early.
Amigo one.
Big game this weekend.
Yeah, and potentially that's why the game went the way it did against the Dolphins, because it was kind of a trap game, because we're looking ahead to the Texans.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But Colts are able to take care of business.
Mm-hmm. AR is undefeated in Houston.
Yeah. And on the
why do you have to look ahead to the Texans? That means they're in front of you, doesn't it? Yeah, that does.
Yeah, on the calendar,
For now.
On the calendar, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, on the standings also.
Well, it's been a long decade with you guys potentially being above us on the standings.
One game up.
That's right. We win this one.
Hold it in conversation. Have to throw for more than 86 yards, brother.
Yeah, what's going on? Is everything okay down there? Is Slowick losing it?
It's fine. It's all fine.
DeForest might be back.
We got to tighten up the end of game situation. That's Buckner's all. We just got to tighten up home. The end of the game.
Oh, DeForest Buckner's
big 99.
Oh my God.
You guys are going to play in an actual loud stadium. I'm really looking forward to it for your players. It'll be a lot of fun.
I don't know if you heard there was 2 ejections this past weekend.
Yeah. You neither for fighting.
What were they for?
Just for being loud.
They're being loud.
There's just mumbling now. So there's a couple things JJ did here. Seth, as you pointed out earlier, they were they were serving him some softballs there for some good comebacks. The whole thing about AR's undefeated at NRG. Oh, really? On games he started and finished? Because he hasn't done that yet at NRG Stadium.
Right, right. He's undefeated as a guy that now he did. I mean, he did basically. He did beat the Texans.
Two
in
long
the first
touchdown
quarter.
Runs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Too long. But if I'm gonna punch, I'm gonna punch back. You know.
No. But then he also JJ also pointed out the fake noise that the Colts have been now just. It seems like weekly somebody's accusing the Colts of pumping in fake noise.
Yeah.
And yes, that was a good little shot.
That was a good shot.
Now, I don't think McAfee and his cronies even got that shot. I don't think they even heard it or understood it.
No, and my first reaction to it was like, look, No disrespect to all the Texan fans out there. When they're there, they're really loud. But yeah. It's still a get there in the second quarter kind of thing going on right now. You know, like this is, I feel like a broken record. I'm like, this is a really important game, and it would be really good if everybody was trying to get in as early as possible. I know that there's some log jams there and things like that, yeah. So I'm sympathetic to all that, but do your best. That's all I ask.
The other thing, too, though, they brought up DeForest Buckner coming back. I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, DeForest Buckner was there the first game.
Yes.
He had 1.5 sacks.
Yeah.
But, you know, but there also were a lot of instances of the front seven, including DeForest Buckner, just getting rolled out by what I thought at the time was a revamped, re-energized, a nasty bunch of offensive linemen that was different than what we had seen previously.
Yep.
And I don't know what happened to those guys, but versus the Colts, that's what that offensive line looked like. So, I'm not scared of DeForest Buckner, I say, with my fingers crossed.
You made the best point earlier about that exchange between J.J. and McAfee, which was them going to the, C.J. only had 86 yards, like, oh, okay, bro. let's dig into Anthony Richardson's game log, shall we? Like, CJ has one bad game, and that's where we are right now. Like that all of a sudden you've got the advantage at quarterback. Get the hell out of here with that.
I think if you look at the Texans coming off of a loss, and you think about CJ Stroud individually, where he's won after losing the previous week. Every week since the beginning of last season.
Yeah.
He didn't the first week two. They lost, obviously, after losing the week before.
Yeah.
But they've come back pretty well. I think if you look at really disappointing QB performance losses, you go to Carolina last year, and where the offense was just, they might as well have not have even showed up. And then CJ the next week comes out and throws for 470 yards versus Tampa.
Yeah, he had the greatest game in the history of rookies.
Yeah, so I feel pretty good about there being some kind of a rebound by the offense.
Yeah. They lost to Jacksonville in week 12. He comes back and beats Denver the next week. Got concussed against the Jets, so he missed a couple games after that. The next game he played, though, was the Colts game in week 18, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
No, he played Tennessee in week 17. They won 26-3, beats the Colts, and then wins a playoff game against Cleveland. So, yeah, I'm not nervous about this being any sort of the Green Bay game being any sort of harbinger of things to come for CJ. Now, if the offensive line doesn't get its act together, then there's just going to be problems in general. We had a texter point this out earlier, Seth, about that Carolina game you're talking about. That was the game after which CJ said, hey, man, we might need to stretch the field. I'm paraphrasing, but we may need to stretch the field a little bit more. Lo and behold, they come back against Tampa Bay the very next week, and he's throwing for 470. Here was CJ yesterday. The question was about trying not to force plays, but he makes somewhat of a request, like something he would like to see with this offense.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I consider myself, you know, a really good football player, and, you know, I have a really good guy, I have a really great God-given talent, and, you know, I love to, you know, show those talents. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I got to be able to, you know, control my ops and, you know, have that controlled aggression. And, you know, that's something that I think I can be better at is, you know, is just, I think I've been, you know, doing a good job of protecting the ball, you know, and taking my ops. I just think I would love some more, you know, and just take on that responsibility of, you know, just putting more on my plate, because I think I can handle it. You know, I've had these conversations with my coaches and my teammates. And so, you know, I think that as we, you know, continue to go and the season gets longer and longer, I'll continue to flourish and grow, you know, and I'm excited for that.
Did we see CJ Cook?
He wants to put some more on my plate.
Yes.
And what I think when I hear that is, all right, listen, you guys are trying to protect me against these blitzes. I appreciate that. You're trying to protect me by running the ball on first down. I appreciate that. Here's the thing. You guys are trying to protect me in the blitz by bringing extra blockers who aren't good at pass blocking.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking them out of routes and putting them in as pass protectors. And it's not helping.
Right.
So can we quit with the act that somehow Dalton Schultz is a good pass protector or something and just get him out on a route instead? Likewise, when people complain about Bobby Slowick running the ball on first down, you're not actually complaining about him running the ball. You're complaining about the Texans being a bad rushing football team. Because, the 49ers at their peak, they run the ball on first down a boatload, but they get something out of it.
They're good at it,
you know? Yeah, right, yeah. Nobody complains about their team running on first down when they're actually good at running the ball on first down. The Texans are not good at running the ball. consistently. Even when they have lots of yardage, they're not consistently winning downs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you got to veer from that strategy a little bit, because I don't know if now is the time when all of a sudden everything's going to click in the run game and these offensive linemen are going to be guys that even – I'm not convinced they genuinely care about run blocking. They make nice little efforts at it at times, but – whatever it is, they're not those guys that you got to just let CJ cook. You got to open things up. You got to turn it into, oh, okay, no, we can't blitz this guy because he's got five receiving options and he's going to find and know which one is the right one.
No, Nico has me nervous about the Colts. Someone texted in.
Yeah.
Well,
you think about the last couple Colts victories. It's included huge deep shots to Nico.
Yeah.
That were the game breakers, but that didn't necessarily, it's not something you can rely on all the time, but you got a couple of big shots out of him and on deep balls, and that was what one of the things that broke the back of the Colts.
So, yeah,
not having that, you just got to be that much better of an actual football team and offense.
Colts are Texans killers at NRG Stadium. They have been. The Texans haven't beaten the Colts at home since 2019. Now, granted, you're talking about 3 years of Texans football where they beat very few people at home at all. This is just a better team. I think if the Texans had caught the Colts in like week 10 last year at home instead of week 2, it might have been a different story.
The whole thing is that it looked like the football gods had tried to balance out the universe and created Nico Collins as the new T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah,
that
new and improved.
Collins could terrorize the Colts the same way T.Y. Hilton did for years against the Texans.
Yep.
And that's a good – it's not just the loss of Nico Collins. It's that Nico Collins was turning into just an absolute Colts killer.
Yes. Yeah, and it's sad we won't get to see that, but hopefully we get to see him in a couple of weeks. That would be good. John Lopez and Reggie Atatula are in the house.
Howdy.
Where are you guys on your Colts game trajectory right now? Like, are you?
Well, I think it's going to be different.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily that I'm worried.
Yeah.
I think
they're going to win. I think the Texans are winning this football.
I think Joe Mixon. That's the same.
Yeah.
You know? We'll see about that.
Yeah. DeMeco's just really good coming off of losses, man. I don't know what the message is in the building, but he's. I was just telling Seth 7-0 since losing to the Colts in week 2, because he lost 2 in a row to start his coaching career. But since then, he is 7-0 and 5-2 against the spread coming off of a loss.
Oh, okay.
That's
sounds like you may have a little something going on there.
Maybe. And the line went down.
Hey.
It's so Texans minus 5.
In addition to a Texans win, I'm hearing a lucrative weekend then?
I don't know about that.
Oh, okay.
It's me betting, so I don't know how lucrative. There'll be several other poor bets to offset whatever success the Texans inevitably have.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it's a short turnaround too, going straight into Thursday night football. I feel like whatever you believe about momentum or anything else like that, just a resounding victory over the Colts at home is a huge offensive outpouring, and then going immediately into a short 4-week game week.
Yeah.
I like that. I feel like there's more at stake than just this individual win or loss. I need to, whatever you believe about it, getting the momentum rolling, figuring things out systemically, whatever it might be.
Learned a lot of things, Seth, about our new colleague, Reggie Atatula, in the few months that we've had a chance to work together. And one thing that I heard almost right away, the first week they were doing the show together, Reggie and John.
Yeah.
Didn't dig too deep into the topic. He saved it for another time, but I could tell by the way he...
Still haven't reached that time.
Yeah. And I don't know if now's the time, but I'm just letting Seth know. I don't think Reggie is a momentum truther. I think you...
Well, this is the whole problem, though, Reggie, before you even give me your thoughts on it.
No, I would love to hear your perspective, because you're very thoughtful
on
these
things. The problem is, this is why momentum is such a great talking point, is because there's no definition
yes.
for what momentum actually
yes.
is.
You're yes. scratching him where he itches.
Yeah, so what you end up getting is people arguing about 19 different things and all firmly convinced that they're 100% correct. So I think sometimes it gets things that are actually way more complex get framed as momentum, and I'm kind of like, all right, I'll go with it. You know, like, okay.
And I think that's the distinction. I'm just like, no, I'm not going to buy it.
I'm not just going to go with it.
I'm not going to do it. Yeah. You're a purist in that regard.
And it causes me so much strife. I should just be able to do what you do. That is the wisdom of someone who has lived a much longer life than I have. I am just soaring with youthful ignorance at this point.
No, you can stop any momentum debate in its tracks by saying, First, let's define the terms. Right. Like, nobody wants to define what momentum actually is. They they'll stop. They won't talk to you after that.
At the risk of leaving a live grenade in the middle of the table as I walk out, John, where are you on momentum?
Just sitting here thinking. I thought we had a really good show yesterday, and I don't know what to expect today.
All right, when should we pencil in momentum?
Is there momentum in sports talk radio?
I was feeling really good about it.
We have something,
guns a-blazing.
Something to build here. All right, I'll put the plug back in the grenade.
I'm just drawing a blank on everything.
I love that. All right, we are done. We are out of time. Seth, Football Friday tomorrow, man. Antibodies to you.
And momentum
antibodies
to you as well.
And inertia to you.
Inertia. I love it.